Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Score Rewind Hour on Sports Radio 670. The Score. Got a few cool things lined up, including White Sox pitching coach Don Cooper talking about Lucas Giolito's no-no the other night. But we start with our family member forever, Jason Goff, calling in to the McNeil and Parkin show because he had some things that he wanted to talk to the fellas about.
I wanted to address some things because I've been listening all day, right? And I appreciate everything that has been said. And I got to say this. I got to commend you, Dan McNeil, because, dude, you know how fond I am of you. And you are one of the reasons why, or I should say you are one of my inspirations for getting into this business. And I found it an incredible joy when I got to be your intern and then got to produce the McNeil and Jiggett show. Or Jiggs and McNeil, that was fun. And hearing you today say some things, I got to be honest with you, player, that I never thought I would hear you say. And I appreciate that, and I'm sorry for I don't even know if it's like not having a higher opinion of you when you speak of this or when I think of how you would speak of this. But I appreciate you, dude. And I just want you to know that there would be know me without you inspiring me. So I just want you to know that from, you know, a former friend, a former coworker, whatever you want to call it. I do appreciate you, not just today because it's your birthday and not just today because you said those words, but I appreciate what you've meant to me. Even when you didn't know you meant it to me, throughout my career.
Well, you know, that's sweet to hear. It really is. And I'm very fond of you, and I don't know what in particular you heard that you didn't think was there already. I hear that every now and again.
I'm just saying, I've never heard you speak with this kind of reverence. About, you know what it is, Mac? I think a lot of black people are finding out how their white counterparts around them feel about them. And I think that's why this is such an emotional time. And it's been an emotional time for a lot of people. You know, like I consider myself an average dude, an average kid who got an opportunity and took advantage of it. And I think all that everybody who is screaming about all the reforms, you can throw a topic out and it needs to be reformed, whether it be education, housing, you know, all these things that lead to good families, good growth and success stories. If I am considered one, a success story. And when you hear how many people don't care about you in so many certain and sometimes uncertain terms, it's discouraging, bro. It's enough to make sane people go crazy. Like, I really want to have it hit home, my man, that the things that you said today, and especially what stuck out to me is I heard the segment where you addressed Shep when he discussed the Jason Hayward situation and not understanding, and I don't want to misrepresent him, but not understanding the frustration for people who didn't, you know, for his teammates not sitting down with him. And I appreciated you in that moment the same way I appreciated you the first time I heard you, because you stirred up the same things in me that were stirred up when I was 12 years old. And that was a connection to a person who, for whatever reason, motivated me to think one way or the other. And that's all this has ever been. That's all this has ever been. It's been connections, right? You connect with, you know, the Irish Bills of the world and the dudes from Lombard and people that you would never probably meet. But this is our space and this is our connection. And as soon as black people started asking white people and non-black people, how do you really feel about us through these examples, we started getting answers that were like, man, you haven't cared this whole time, bro. And whether it be talking to me about black-on-black crime and all these other things, like using all these things that ail our city and ail our country as a talking point to win a conversation means that we're not having a good faith discussion. And that means the social contract, when we have good faith discussions, has been broken. And I feel like a lot of black people are sitting around these days, brothers, saying, yo, the social contract continues to be broken and nobody gives a damn. It's very easy to take a black life, whether it be by a black person or by a white person or any race. It's very, very easy, apparently. And that's what we're seeing. So when I hear Shep not understanding why people might be questioning why his dudes didn't sit down with him, let me tell you something, man. Like, I have not met Danny Parkin's son. I've only met your kids, Mac, a couple of times, I believe, right? I've met Terry's kids a bunch of times. If any one of those people had something happen to their family member, I'm sitting down with them, man. And I say that to say this. We are watching our brothers and sisters be murdered on television, man. And if Jacob Blake ain't a perfect enough victim for you, you're going to tell me next that Trayvon Martin ran up on a security guard and deserved to get shot, right? And these are the same people who hold in high regard the Brian Urlachers of the world, the Bobby Holes of the world. Like, people who you're like, yo, you don't question some of the things that they have said and done, but you outright question me because I'm like, yo, stop. You know, we gotta make sure that it's not the biweekly television show on social media of brothers and sisters dying at the hands of law enforcement. Like, come on, man. I care about black-on-black crime as well. But you don't see me asking any white host or any of my white homies, like, yo, what are y'all doing about the opiate problem in the Midwest?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Right? You don't hear me asking any ladies in my life, like, but, man, what are y'all doing about things that might be out of your control that's plaguing you? Right? You try to help. And in the end, all this is a little outrage, a little disgust, and then we're going to move on to the next one. And all I'm trying to say is, if you don't think that we're not watching our brothers and sisters out here getting slaughtered and think that, you know, tonight might be the night I'm going to sit this one out with my man. Let me tell you something. I don't know Danny Parkins that well. If Danny Parkins ever told me, yo, I need you to come through, and then he told me some bad news, I'm going to feel for him. I'm going to feel for him, and I'm going to stay there until he's right. Black people have been waiting for somebody to be like, yo, I'm here with you until you're right. And we got some, but we don't have enough. We don't have enough, and this country is not going to be what it's supposed to be until we are treated like American citizens. And the asking, like Martin Luther King was asking and all these other people were asking and hoping and praying and using religion and all these things in marches, right? And they assassinated him, right? So, like, what are we talking about here? You want to know why unified, especially black wealth, but unified black people scare a lot of people. it scares a lot of people. And this is one of those things where we're all on the same accord, right? I would hope, at least. And it's scaring some people into thinking that it's time to take away your liberties, or, you know, you shouldn't believe in the institutions that you believe in. No, you can believe in any institution that you want to, but I also believe in holding that institution accountable, because we get held accountable at every single step, every single step. And then we have to go on with our lives too, right? Like, this has affected me in a way, brothers, that I am incredibly sad about.
Like, well, that was what I was going to ask him, Jay. Like how it feels to me, right? It, who is not fearful of interactions with the police, so dispiriting because it's so repetitive. And we could read a statement from today, and it could have been a statement after George Floyd or Laquan McDonald, and it's the deja vu and the repetitiveness and like the feeling of entrenchment and that nothing changes. I know Jace isn't old enough yet for you to have those conversations, but like, so much of this, I think, is like viewed through the macro lens, right? Black people, sports, LeBron James, who this is obviously a human being and an individual, but a larger than life figure. How does all of this hit you as a person?
I'm dead tired by 9 a.m., my brother. Like, I wear this differently than a lot of people that I know. Whether it be my black friends, my white friends, my Latino homies, like whatever the case may be. Like, I wear this a little bit differently, and I hate it because on one hand I get told, you got to ignore these people, man. And on the other hand, I'm like, but wait a minute though. You know, ignoring people and not saying anything has gotten us nowhere, bro. Like, 4 years ago, I will tell you this. You want to know how this affected me, Danny?
Yeah.
4 years ago, I felt like none of my teammates stood up for me. 4 years ago, when the whole Colin Kaepernick thing went down and, you know, whatever happened with me at the station went down, I felt like, damn. Now, I won't say none, but I felt like the dudes that I thought were my dudes, some of them at least, didn't hold me down. And then guess what happened? Like, 2 weeks before I got let go, I was looking into getting some therapy and talking to somebody because of the stuff that I was carrying. Like, I was a new dad. My son was born 32 weeks. My son was 2 pounds, 12 ounces when he was born. My son was in the hospital, was in the NICU for 5 weeks, right? And you know that life, Danny, right? You know that struggle. I went to work every day,
bro. Yeah,
I was
there for 27 days.
I went to work every day, fam.
Yeah.
I went to work every day while black people were getting shot. And I lost it. I'll never forget the day I lost it when Jace was still in Nicole's belly. I lost it on the air with Spiegel. And I cried, man, because I felt like nobody cared, right? And then I get let go 2 weeks before. I was like, okay, I'm gonna talk to somebody about this because it feels like it's too much. It feels like it's too heavy. 2 weeks before I got let go, I start to look into it. I get let go, and there goes my insurance. So now I'm making a certain amount of money because I got my money and I had two other gigs, you know, that I was working on or working at the time. But now I feel like, where am I? And I'm also dealing with the fact that I took a really public L, which for the first time in my life, I realized that the game didn't love me the way I love the game. So now I'm in a daze. I got to be a dad. I'm going through a difficult relationship. Like, all these things are happening. And on top of that, I got to worry about if I should drive through certain neighborhoods. If I, you know what I mean? Like, all these things are on your head. So when I say that, I don't say that for people to, you know, that tiniest violin time me. I'm just telling you, I'm the average black dude. I'm the average dude that's wearing this. Think about people who have more pressures, more responsibilities, more wealth, all these other things, like some of these athletes, or even more so, think about the impoverished people who have.
Well, that's
to
what I was thinking,
with,
right? You got it.
Who
like,
have to, who have to?
You're being a little hard on yourself, calling yourself average, because you've accomplished a lot of things, and you have
a
platform.
You know why I'm average? You know why I'm average, Danny? Because I want to put four or five brothers and sisters in my position or put them on to show people that it gets a lot better than me. That's like my career goal. Like it used to go, like people used to ask me, what do I want in life? I'm like, man, I want my own radio show. I want to show people that I could do this for a long period of time. Now it's like, I want to put four or five people who wouldn't be in these positions that are, you know, that are qualified and talented because we are those two, put them in position because I want people to understand how average I was. You know what I mean? Like, these are the things I think about, and I worry about my kids. I worry about my cousins. I worry about my buddy's newborn. Like, I worry about these kids. And for anybody to tell me, oh, man, you're putting too much pressure, you're being too hard on yourself, check the tape, bro. Check the tape. Check the tape. Those people, Jacob Blake was in Evanston quite often. I know his cousin. All right? So it's like, all right, so he's not the perfect victim. All right, let's talk about Tamir Rice, 12-year-old. Let's talk about, like, I am so afraid of giving this world to my son. And that's why I move the way I move. And that's why I don't pull punches with people. I used to walk around that station and force myself not to have bad days in front of people. You know what kind of weight that is, man. You know what kind of weight that is. I couldn't get busy. Like, you know, and I'm not going to name no names, but I couldn't go off. I couldn't throw stuff. I couldn't, you know what I mean? I couldn't have a bad day where I told a salesperson not today. I had to, you know, hey, I had to tighten up. I got babies to feed, you dig? Those things are on, and that's why I say the average black man or woman's mind every single day. So to hear how much people don't care about you is tough. Like humanity, the humanity of it all. This is a public health issue. Watching black people die on the internet has become far too fashionable, man. Like, that is crazy to me that we're doing this every 2 weeks, bro. Like, I and people think, you know, the best part is I get hit with the, oh, you're a race baiter. Nah, man, I promise you, all I want to talk about is sports. All we want to talk about as sports fans are sports. But guess what? We wake up with certain things that we have to prepare ourselves for. And then we have to pass that trauma down to our kids because we have to make sure that we are preparing them for the world that they are about to step in. I know that at some point I'm going to have to tell my son, hey, man, no matter what happens to you in an interaction with the police, make it home, player. Make it home. Make it home. I don't care if they they handcuff you. I don't care if they do whatever it is to you, because I know the kind of man I'm trying to raise. So I'm hopeful that he is not going to get himself in any serious trouble. But make it home for me. How many white fathers who are listening to this station right now feel they have to tell their kid that? And until that isn't the norm, none of this is going to be okay. And I'll talk sports with you till the cows come home. All I did was argue basketball the last week or so because I was in heaven. I didn't think I needed it the way I did. But now that it's gone for the day or whatever the case may be, and now guess what's happening? It's getting turned on its head. See, these players, look, they did this for one day. What does it really mean? This is happening from black and white people, right? And I'm saying to myself, but hold on now. They, you know, they're getting the Walton family to try to flex some muscle because they understand how involved they are in the NBA. You know, the ownership groups in the NBA, they're going to have to come to the table this offseason, right? Polling places are cool. Like, open up all these empty arenas to make sure that people have safe, socially distanced polling places. Like, things are in action. Things are happening in that bubble. I'm talking to a couple of players in that bubble about certain things. So the fact that immediately it's not cool for us to kneel, all right, cool. Do that on your own time. All right, bet. We'll make sure that no time is the time then. We'll stop work right now. Oh, damn, I don't like that either. Well, at what point can I tell you that I'm tired of being abused and you be okay with it? And for the people who think that that not saying the N-word or doing all this other stuff is their, you know, their contribution to, you know, race relations, sorry. Not gonna cut it. That's not enough. It's not enough. I wanna hang and talk with all the same people that I've been hanging and talking with for a long time. But you know what? I want to make sure my son gets to enjoy that company as well. I want to make sure that he grows up to live a full and accomplished life, whatever he wants to do. If you want to sing his little heart out, knock yourself out. If you want to be somebody's backup dancer, knock yourself out. If you want to be somebody's scientist, knock yourself out. But give him a chance to grow. I ran up on a, and I know you guys got to go. I ran up on a kid a couple of weeks ago who I saw having a tough interaction with his mother in a hallway of a building. I was like, yo, that's not it, my man. That's not it. And I got him a scholarship to this basketball camp because he was dribbling the basketball when it happened. And I told him, you got to take care of her. Guess what? That's the same kid that if something happens, everybody's going to be pointing to like, see, look at these thugs. Look at these thugs. But if you interact with them and you show them that they're worth it and you put something back into them, then maybe things might change. I'm telling you, this country's going to be a lot better when black people start getting treated better. It's as simple as that. And if you don't believe me, just dare me. I dare you to try it. I dare this entire world, this entire country to try it. And I promise you, we're the most forgiving people in the world. How many centuries have we been watching some sort of discrimination, manipulation, maiming, harming, and there's been very little uprising, if you think about it, right? At what
No
point,
question. Yes.
At what point is it not going to be okay? And in the end, I still want to talk about David Montgomery's groin.
Right back where we started. It's our buddy Jason Goff with McNeil and Parkins today. Sports Radio 670, The Score, a vital conversation there. Jason obviously brought up a lot of important stuff. There is something else that I wanted to pass along because it's a developing story with the New York Mets organization. So we talked about Brody Van Wagenen, their general manager, getting picked up on a hot mic. It was posted on the team's website, should not have been posted. He was basically trash-talking Rob Manfred. He doesn't get it, doesn't understand what he's doing. Then the Mets circle back, oh, no, it wasn't Rob Manfred's idea to tell the Mets and the Marlins, go on the field, leave the field for an hour, then you come back and play the game so we don't have any scheduling issues. No. That was not Rob Manfred. Then, was it Jeff Wilpon? I believe it was Jeff Wilpon who said, no, that was my fault. Now we have joint statements from the Wilpons on this. My gosh, they are going to the mat for Manfred on this one. He also had a statement from Manfred that I read earlier if you want to check that out. But here's the statement from the chairman and CEO, Fred Wilpon. I am very stressed and disappointed to learn tonight that our general manager, Brody Van Wagenen, made disrespectful and inaccurate comments about our commissioner, a longtime close friend of mine. I hold Rob in the highest regard, and in no way are Brody's remarks reflective of my views or the organization's. Rob continues to be a great leader of Major League Baseball. I apologize for any harm this incident has caused Rob. Oh my God. Is Brody Van Wagenen getting fired for this? Here's Mets COO Jeff Wilpon. To clear up any misunderstandings, it was my suggestion to potentially look into playing the game later because of scheduling issues. Brody's misunderstanding of a private conversation was and is inexcusable. We fully respect our players and the Marlins players' decision to not play tonight and appreciate the sincerity of all those who wish to draw attention to social injustices and racial inequalities that must be addressed. The entire Mets organization remains committed to creating meaningful change in our society. Dude, are they going to fire this guy? And I think he told the truth. That's the Mets.
That's unbelievable, Joe. Like, absolutely unbelievable. Like, I get it. You made a mistake, and you shouldn't have said that on a hot mic or around a hot mic. I mean, especially, like, we
this
just
is
saw
why
this
nobody,
happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if he was talking to reporters or not, but since this has gone everywhere, that audio, we've got a statement from Van Wagenen apologizing. Got a statement from Manfred. Hey, I'm the greatest. Now we have two statements from the top of the organization with the Mets. Oh, Jesus. Rob Manfred is still the worst, and everybody believes it. You guys aren't saving anything as far as that goes. Wow. Coming up next, we'll hear from Cubs. No, not the Cubs. Never the Cubs. He would never work for the Cubs. His name's Don Cooper. He's the White Sox pitching coach. And one of his pupils threw a no-hitter the other day. He dropped by Mullion Haw to talk about that. That is next. Joe Ostrowski here, 670 The Score on the Radio.com app.
Actually, Jeff, that's not happening. They're not dealing with reality. They're not playing. But that's Rob's instinct. And Rob, not exactly good at leadership level, he doesn't get it. He just doesn't get it.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
And I want to apologize for that. There's no excuse for it. I made a mistake. I was trying to make a point, but I should have made it in a more effective way. And again, I want to apologize for it.
This guy's an idiot.
Not less, Manfred. Joe Ostrowski with you, Sports Radio 670 The Score, Score Rewind Hour. Let's go back to happier times. The other night during the White Sox game, when Lucas Giolito was just dominating, so much fun to watch. And there were a couple innings. Guys on the call, they're like, "Should we not say it? Maybe you don't say the word no hitter," which really bothers me. It upsets me so much. Like, your job, when people are distracted so much watching games nowadays, whether it's family stuff or just watching other games, flipping around, can't sit there the entire time without a crowd. You know, they weren't going nuts after every single out. So if you're not telling your audience what is happening, I have a problem with that. Like, that's your number one job. But over the last few innings, they did go out of their way to talk about that with just about every single pitch. I digress. Don Cooper this morning with Mullion Haw talking about Lucas Giolito's magical night.
Sure. I mean, it turned out to be a fun day at the ballpark. You know, we get a win, number one, and we get a little history and a no-hitter along with it. It's one I've always considered. We've had four of them, and, you know, they're just great days. You know, two by Burley, a perfecto, and a no-no. One by Humber, a perfecto. And this one last night, and they all have similarities, by the way. But for a coach, it's like a bonus, a perk of the job. You know, another perk, as I'm saying that I always said this over the years, is when, you know, you're bringing kids up to the big leagues for the first time, no matter who that is over the years. And now it's been a lot of years. So they get to see them realize their dream since they were maybe second, third graders. And get into the big league. So to be a part of that, to see that, it's a perk of the job. And if they can get a beer bath at the end of the night with a victory, it makes it even better. So those are just two things that, you know, as a coach, you just really appreciate.
Coop, when did your trained eyes see a sign that this might be the night that Lucas throws the no-hitter? And how superstitious were you as you watched it unfold?
Okay, well, you never see it coming. You could, because in the bullpen before the game, he was good. And I've seen Lucas good a lot of times in the bullpen, you know, and I've seen Lucas not so good in the bullpen. And that would go for everybody that I've ever had. It's an interesting thing because the first inning is the most vulnerable one for every starting pitcher. You know, he had good stuff, like I said, but as the game goes, it starts to form. And one common denominator for me, in all of these, after the seventh inning, I said, either out loud or to myself, and the other night it was to myself, I said, now the real, you know, because you don't wake up in the morning thinking this is going to happen. It kind of forms, and that's what happened. And all of a sudden, after seven, you got six outs left, and this becomes very doable. It can happen. And another thing that happens in these things, in these games, the pitchers themselves are pouring strikes in to a large degree. I mean, Lucas was almost 3-1 strike the balls. So he was giving himself the best chance to succeed in this. So another thing is there's usually 2-3, maybe even 4 great defensive plays that happen in all of these games that aid drama. You know, like Timmy's play up the middle the other night with Bray scooping it up. At the moment, didn't see him all that big. But looking back on it, wow, you don't make that play, you don't get to the spot. And certainly the 0-2 pitch that we were trying to elevate it, didn't elevate it quite as much as you'd like. And a line drive that Adam Engel closed very, very well on and secured the no-hitter. And then the joy proceeds. You know, that just a few things to go on.
You know, what was fun is, like, you kind of interrupted your home run derby season to have a no-hitter. I mean, it was pretty extraordinary to see the bats going crazy, and then here we go. Here's the pitching. I mean, it's got to be tons of fun at the old ballpark when you're watching this stuff work like that.
Well, you know, listen, over the last few years, it's been rough. That's what a rebuild is, you know, I guess. And now we're coming out of the rebuild, and – you mentioned the bats, and I don't think I've seen a display in all my time here over the last that week, that 8, 9, 10 days, whatever, of us. Excuse me, I gotta fix that, guys. You know, the offense it has been phenomenal. I don't think it's been that good for that period of time with that many home runs and things like that, and guys running around. And what's cool about it is, you know, it might be Louis Robert and T one day. And the next day it could be Encarnacion and Abreu. It just seems to be floating around. You know, our offense is a potent offense, and it's only going to get better as time goes, as Louis Robert gets more at bats and things like that. And, you know, we've had some injuries along the way, too, but that offense right now, it's impressive, and it's a difficult offense. If one or two guys are going, it's a difficult offense to go through. If there's more than that going, that starting pitcher who's against us or pitcher against us has a difficult time navigating through that lineup because it's dangerous. And we're hoping it stays dangerous. It's just a whole lot nicer. Well, you know, we're getting wins. That's the whole thing that's going to the ballpark every day, even during the rebuild. You know, you want to win. You know, everybody prepares to win when you know it sucks. But now... you know, we've struggled through some really lean times, and we're getting to the better times.
Coop, the offense has been so good that I think it's almost overshadowed the fact that your starting pitching since the first spin through the rotation has been one of the best in baseball. And you look at the numbers, and they support that idea. What changed after the first time through when things looked a little shakier, but now it doesn't look shaky at all?
Well, you know, listen, I got feelings on it. The first time, first of all, it's a restart. We were all prepared. You know, it just didn't happen. I mean, you just mentioned this, David, that Lucas in his first start opening day, there was a lot of hoopla going on, a lot of things happening, and I think he just lost himself a little bit that day, had a rough first inning. So in one time, Lucas didn't give us a chance. Same thing with Dylan C so far. One time. Keiko's given us a chance every single time. Lopez in his first outing. You know, he had a terrible first inning. He left the game hurt. We've lost him for a month. That's our number three guy. Rodon had a rough first inning in his outing, and he's rehabbing. He still was coming back from injury. But it's just interesting how it goes. They had a rough turn, one rough turn, and all of the crap that gets stirred up in town because of that. Get this guy, send him out. You know, bring somebody else up and fire the coaches. All of this stuff happens. The bottom line is, you know, they had one outing where it didn't happen. And, you know, to their credit, they've all bounced back well. And we need this to keep going because if we get good starting pitching, I think we're going to be in business. And since that one outing, we have been much, much better. And that's not to even talk about the bullpen has been outstanding as well. And, you know, like I said, I just mentioned that we lost our number three starter and our number five starter for a while. And, you know, you guys, I don't even know how long, but because we just got to pick up and keep moving. You don't play tech. You don't keep track of it necessarily. But we lost our number three and number five guy for a while. And, oh, by the way, we lost probably the best lefty in the American League, arguably. And he's been out for a while. So a lot of other people have to step up, move up. And they're handling the situations right now well. So we're weathering that storm, and we just got Lopez back. We're hoping to get Rodon back, and there's still a good deal of hope in getting Bummer back at some point, which is only going to make us stronger.
Coop, obviously Michael Kopech opted out, and we have not heard anything from him. We know that he's going through a tough time. Are you in touch with him? Have you talked to him? How is he doing? It's you feel bad for the kid, because he's also missing out on this. You know, this is an amazing thing to watch.
Well, my only thought and comment on Michael is, no, I haven't spoken to him, and I hope he's okay. I hope he's all right. I hope he, you know, it's one of those things. You know, last time I spoke about Michael, I even said I don't want to talk about this, and I did, and very little, and it wasn't portrayed in the same light that I spoke. Again, my feeling on Michael is simply this. We care for the kid. We love the kid. We hope he's okay. And I haven't been in touch with him, and I'm not sure. I haven't even asked around because of his decision to opt out. Has anybody spoken to him? I have left messages, oh, this is going back a while ago. And they were returned, so he's just not ready to talk, at least to us and to me. And, you know, we'll just wait it out and hope for the best. So that's it on Michael.
Coop, one man's absence is another's opportunity, and I think Dane Dunning really represented himself pretty well when he got the chance to go on the mound for the first time in a very long time, harness those emotions. When can we see him again? How do you think he did?
I think he did pretty well. You know, I think he hit the first time in the big leagues, first game in the big leagues. And, you know, the only difference with all of this that's going on is there's no fans out there. But it's an interesting time to me. With people getting opportunities that probably wouldn't normally happen in a regular season game, you know, a regular season on the 62, because of everything that's going on, you know, with the virus. So he got an opportunity, but you know what, too? So has Birdie, so has Foster, so has Hoyer. So it's getting a chance for younger guys to come up here, and they've all handled it well. And Dunning deserves another chance. When he gets that, you'll find that out. You'll see. It'll be announced when he gets his next chance. You got to believe it. You got to believe it's coming. Carlos is on the brink, but it's just nice to get a chance to see all of these kids come up at the same time, and we're finding out some good stuff about them right now. In looking towards the future, you know, not only the rest of this year, but you know, the years to come. So it's the White Sox rebuild. In a way, continuing by now transferring even more guys from our minor league system to the big leagues. You know, over the years, there's been a lot of guys to come through these doors, you know, over the years, a lot of different people. And these guys are our future and part of our future, so we're excited about it.
Don Cooper, White Sox pitching coach with Mully and Hall this morning, Sports Radio 670, The Score. We've got to hook Coop up with a different phone. What was he apologizing for, Jordan? I don't know what he was apologizing for in the middle of the... Maybe he was apologizing
Somebody
for
needs
swearing
to mute their
earlier
phone.
In the interview. Which he does all the time. I don't... I've talked about this with Hawk Harrelson. Coop, too. Like, you know you're on the air. Why do you think you can swear? And it happens all the time. Unbelievable. So I was reading those the statements from Fred Wilpon and Jeff Wilpon just a little bit ago. I didn't even notice this. Twice in those two statements, they misspelled Brody Van Wagenen's first name. So in the first line, they mentioned his name. They spelled it correctly. Then two more times, they mentioned Brody. It's spelled B-R-O-D-Y, and it's really an I-E, which they had correct the first time.
Come on, man.
Is that intentional? It's hard to misspell Joe, so I don't really run into that unless it's Herb Lawrence, and he's calling me something he shouldn't be calling me. Jordan, anybody, I'd have to imagine in the city of Chicago, nobody's ever misspelled your name.
I don't think so.
No.
Although I've had IN.
Were you named after MJ?
See, my parents don't
were you
say
named after
my parents
MJ?
Don't say it, but if you think about it during the run, 94, like he was the biggest thing here. They said they liked the name, but I feel like there was a lot of influences to it.
Okay. They're not willing to admit. See, I would just lean into it after seeing how big of a hoop head you are.
Well, the funny thing is
fan,
as I was packing
Bulls podcasts,
as I was packing our house, I found a newspaper from the day I was born, and it's Michael Jordan the first day at camp in his White Sox, full White Sox uniform, and it was a full ad page taken out. And it was the first time I had ever seen it, and I was like, wow, this is awesome. And the date, March 2nd, 1994. And I was like, this is kind of unbelievable. I'm a huge White Sox fan, huge Bulls fan. Weird how those things line up.
And he never spoke with Sports Illustrated again.
True. Very, yeah, very true.
You missed the best part of the Sox, at least in my lifetime. People would argue with me because they won a World Series in 05, but I those 90 Sox teams were so much fun when you were born. So much fun. And that was Hawk in his prime, and the nicknames for every single player were just awesome. All right, we've got a little bit more. Score Rewind. Got a compelling conversation, because that's what we bring you during Score Rewind. Next, Joe O Show, 670 The Score in the radio.com app.
Somebody needs to mute their phone. Mute their phone.
So what are they doing, Joe? What are they doing?
One more interview I want to bring your way during Score Rewind. Joe Ostrowski here, Sports Radio 670 The Score. Wait a second. I was completely off on the time. Jordan, do we even have time to play this? Are we going to cut into CBS Sports Radio? I know people would be very upset if we did that. Is that what we're going to do? I didn't even realize this is the top of the hour. What do you want to do?
Yeah, I think people should hear Vincent
Goodwill. Are we going to play the interview, though? I think they'd rather hear Vincent Goodwill than CBS. Call me crazy. No offense to whoever's hosting the show right now.
I would agree with you.
Whatever you think. You make the call. Joe Ostrowski here, Sports Radio 670 The Score. I don't know if I'm in the air tomorrow. If there's rain, there's rain in the forecast in Cincinnati. I haven't heard confirmation that they're even going to play the game anyways. If they do, it's going to be a 5:10 pregame, 6:10 first pitch between the Cubs and the Reds. But if there's no game, if they opt out of playing, or if there's a delay of some sort, I will be here tomorrow at 6 o'clock on The Score. If you don't hear from me tomorrow, you'll hear from me on Saturday morning. Early odds every Saturday, 8 to 9 a.m. It sneaks up on you. All of a sudden, you look up like, oh, it's football time. It's NFL time, I guess.
Go Bears!
So they tell us otherwise. The NFL is starting in a couple of weeks. So we got to start previewing the NFL season. We're going to do that in early odds Saturday at 8 o'clock. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast. Look up Early Odds with Joe Ostrowski. And so you have it, because I get it. You're busy on Saturday mornings. Want to thank Tony Gill for dropping by, Jordan Malley for producing. We leave you with our pal Vinny Goodwill on the Dan Bernstein Show on Sports Radio 670 The Score. Good night.
Vinny, always good to talk to you, my man. I know you've never seen anything like yesterday, because none of us have. What were your biggest takeaways that you feel like you'll always remember from yesterday?
How exhausted I was. Honestly, I think it's hard for people to truly understand. And even as a writer, like, I'm not in the bubble or anything like that, so I'm not with the players. But when you have to continuously explain your humanity, when you continuously have to explain why these players are or are not doing this, it becomes mentally taxing. So if it's that way for me, I can't imagine what it's like for these guys to be in this restrictive bubble, right? And they have to exert this maximum amount of energy to be in that playoff atmosphere, right? Because the playoffs require so much mental energy, right? And then as soon as the game is over, you have to talk to the media, explain to the media all these different things, and then live after that. There is no break. There's no space to breathe. There's no space to be. And to me, that's like the microcosm of being black. You have to live in this restrictive environment. You have to go to work. You have to come home. Well, you got to make it home first. And then maybe then you'll get a chance to breathe, unless you don't turn on the TV or if you don't open your phone and see Twitter. Like, that's what I saw yesterday, the exhaustion.
I think that's obviously very well said. What struck me was the realization of power, because NBA players have used their collective power before. I mean, we're seeing it in the bubble, in the jersey, in the kneeling, in the statements on the court. But, man, just the domino effect of we had thought that sports were flimsy because of the pandemic, and now it might have been racism that ended the NBA bubble, not the deadly virus. That realization of power, of how they could take it all away and they won't be used for our escapism, I thought was incredible. And honestly, Vinny, I think that changes the game going forward, especially in the NBA and the NFL. Like, that realization from players, they used it once. They say they're going to resume the playoffs, but it wouldn't strike me or wouldn't surprise me at all if they use that power again.
You're a little bit more optimistic than I. And I can't say that I don't hope that something monumental comes out of this, but you're absolutely right. The NBA was the first domino, right? It was the first domino from the – think about the visual, right? If we had heard about this leading up to – we had heard Nuggets and everything else. Mark Spears from ESPN does an incredible job. He had been mentioning the thought of it. Then you saw George Hill being inactive. I'm like, wait a minute, George Hill didn't hurt himself. Like, that's kind of weird. All right. And you kind of start going, and then you see the warm-up of the game. You see one team on the floor, and they're waiting on Milwaukee just to come out and warm up, and you don't see that. Like, imagine how different the feeling would be if the NBA just came up with this prepared statement, all the games are postponed today because the players decided da-da-da-da. It wouldn't have hit the same way. So for the team, the Milwaukee Bucks, to basically go off script from everybody and do this, it created this domino effect for everybody else to follow. And you saw, excuse me, you saw the WNBA go through it. You saw, you know, some teams from Major League Baseball. I can't think of the guy's name from the Mets. He was really, really emotional giving his press conference. And he's the only black guy on the team. Like, you start to see, you know, the power of sport as a whole. And you got to see, like you said, we're not going to be your escapism. Because here's the other part of it, Danny. These guys don't close their social media, right? Or, you know, even in the case of Paul George and all the stuff that he was going through. These guys, social media is these only guys' connection to the outside world because they aren't able to see. So when certain things happen, they got to see what people, whether it's Twitter Egg or Flag Guy or whatever it is, or guy with a bunch of numbers after his name. You know those Twitter thugs I'm talking
about? Yeah, of course. Dog Avi, Eagle Avi, yeah, of course.
All those. And they got to see what those people were saying in between the games to them that had probably nothing to do with basketball. And the toll that took on, they say, you know what, we're stopping this. Because clearly what we're doing, I won't even say the word is appreciated or valued, but clearly what we're doing here isn't reaching its desired effect.
Mets first baseman Dominic Smith, by the way, was terrific. That moved me as much as anything I saw since yesterday afternoon, Vinny. I want to ask you a question because I honestly do not know the answer to this. What do you believe so far work stoppages are accomplishing?
I think the fact that players, whether it's guys going rogue and guys following, or collective voice, like, this is a monumental day. Like, there's been racial unrest throughout the country for decades. Like, this ain't new. But for it to reach sport and for it to reach the heart and minds of the players in this particular situation, the bubble, where the players know we have to get this done to get our money and save the rest, not just this season, but the rest of the seasons moving forward. And for a day, they put that cradle of doubt in owners' minds, in the world's minds. To me, that's powerful. Now, who knows? Like racism has been winning this war for 400 years. You're not going to get anything done in a day. You're not going to get anything accomplished in 2 months in an Orlando bubble. But you have to at least start trying to push that rock uphill. And my feeling is it's not on the athletes to save the world. It's not on black women to save the election. It's not on LeBron James to save, you know, black people, or Michael Jordan to save black people or anything else. But to basically hold feet to the fire of the people who make decisions, because these players have access to money. And the access to money gives them access to how money works and how power works. So they see the owners. They see how these owners can get things done behind closed doors and get things advantageous to themselves business-wise. They know that that can happen for them on the front end of it for issues that matter. They're trying to make these owners put forth their collective power, be it at the smaller level or at the federal level. And I do think that that means something. The threat of the leverage means something even greater than the usage of it.
We're talking to Vincent Goodwill, covers the NBA for Yahoo Sports. What are you hearing, if anything, about whether it's in Milwaukee with Jacob Blake or something more broad about specific action items that NBA players are trying to request here?
They're supposed to get on a call with maybe it was in the past half hour or so. But they were supposed to get on a call with 13 of the owners and Michael Jordan and Adam Silver and a couple of union reps, like two guys from each team, that type of thing. And that was going to be the start of that particular conversation. Clearly getting on the phone with the attorney general in Milwaukee and wanting to get the legislature back in session that hasn't been in session for months now. Like being able to, hey, let's get an investigation going. Let's get this officer on camera, charged, held, arrested, something to move things forward. Like when you saw, you've seen over the past few months or past couple years, what, lack of a better phrase, and don't take this the wrong way, guys, what white power can do. Whether it's, you know, a Meek Mill getting the push from Robert Kraft and I can't think of the guy's name from the 76ers, Rubin. And they got him out of prison.
Yes,
he's a celebrity and everything else, and I get that. But that influence can be used in so many different ways. And before, what would happen would be all these people say, oh, no, we don't really have that type of influence. And they'd be like, yes, you do. And you see it now. So now that you see it, okay, where do we go from here?
Well, I mean, I'm interested in that, too. I mean, obviously, the macro racist issues are going to, like you said, not going to be solved by basketball players and not going to be solved in this generation. It's been America's original sin. It's going on 400 years, and hopefully it's not 400 years into the future. I am curious what you think about the rest of the bubble. Like, do you think, okay, they're going to start playing again in a couple of days, according to the statement, right? Friday or Saturday is the most recent word. Do you think they see this thing through?
Yeah, I think they do. I think they do because even the threat of shutting it down in the middle of the playoffs is a strong enough threat to get people to pay attention. Now, to say, hey, we're going to really shut this thing down and we're going to go full cap and sacrifice our entire careers for this, to me, that's asking a lot. But I think the threat of it and saying, okay, we're in the middle of this, we've got 1 month left. They are, I'll say, really close, but you're playing every other day. The teams are going to start to dwindle because playoff teams will get eliminated and everything else is going to be down to 8, and then it'll be down to 4, and then it'll be the finals, and then we'll be done, presumably by October 15th or 17th or something like that, correct? So once you get close enough to the finish line, you dig in. And also at the same time, guys, you understand that, quote-unquote, you don't give up your platform and everything else. And I think they're starting to fully understand the value of platform. Because when you're in the bubble and you're in that isolated environment, I don't think they realize the power of their words because they're just there. There's no access to the outside world as it's intended to be. And I think with this act yesterday, it let them know how powerful their words and actions are because of all the subsequent things that happened yesterday and that are happening today.
Vincent, I know basketball is your baby, but I want to ask you a question about a baseball team and decisions made yesterday. The Cubs were in Detroit, and after a few other teams announced they weren't participating, the Cubs had a quick meeting. Jason Hayward, their black outfielder, said, "You don't have to do this for me, but I'm not playing tonight." Nobody did it for him. He is not the only black player on the roster, yet last night he was the only one who didn't go to work, which we're scratching our heads about. That doesn't feel to us like solidarity. And I know he gave them, you know, the mulligan before the game started, And I can't help but suspect there already has been a lot of regret from his teammates. If there isn't, at least with some of them, something's wrong. That to me, that shouldn't have happened. How do you feel about it?
Allow me to remind you that I think the three most segregated cities in the United States are Detroit, Chicago, and Milwaukee. So can we just say that this is going true to form? And I know that these players aren't necessarily Chicago natives, but I'm not surprised at this largely. And I do think there will be some currency here. There will be some currency that's a cost for some of those teammates. Like Jason Hayward will look at some of these guys real funny in the light that they didn't stand by him in this. What did it cost some of these players to say, you know what, we're not going to play tonight? And all he probably needed was one more guy to say, you know what, Jason, I'm with you. And either that speaks to how they feel about Jason Hayward, or that speaks to how they feel about the cause and how disconnected they are. And they live in Chicago, guys. How can you not be connected to the cause with some of the things that have happened over the past, you know, few years? You have to be living in, like, some type of, lack of a better phrase, a bubble if you're not aware of how these things affect the city in which you play in. So I do think there's going to be, unfortunately, a price to pay in terms of how this team bonds and builds together moving forward that maybe guys didn't even realize. Guys, not one guy in that clubhouse could say, you know what, Jason, I'm not playing tonight. I'm with you. And you think if one guy did it, wouldn't the rest have followed?
Yeah, I agree with you. It was a terrible look. Apparently, guys said they supported him and went into David Ross and said they were uncomfortable playing if Hayward wasn't, but they didn't actually say, well, I'm definitively not playing. And that was where we're going to play Jed Hoyer, the GM, here in a few minutes. He was on with us earlier. He lamented the lack of timing, and you could hear it in his voice. He did not like how it came across for his baseball team. So Cubs fans will hear that coming up in just a couple of minutes. Vinny, I apologize if this isn't fair. I don't like the idea because you're right. It's the responsibility of the people in power, the empowered class, white people historically, right? The oppressor, all of those sort of things. I am curious, though, if you could just explain to the audience, like, what is the simplest thing that you want to get across here, right? Your experience as a black man in America is different than Max and mine. I'm curious, what do you want us and our audience to know about those differences?
The difference is, and I can put this as plainly as possible, when I get pulled over, I am of the mindset that I have to prove why I deserve to stay alive. It doesn't matter if I'm pulled over for going 55 and a 54, or as I was once pulled over for going 35 and a 45. I know that once my car goes into the hazard lights, that my life is in hazard. That I literally have to prove from the moment that my window rolls down that I have to prove why I deserve to stay alive. That is something I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. That isn't something I would wish on Twitter Egg, on Gar Foreman's hazardous decisions. That isn't something I would wish on anybody. I said Gar's decisions, not Gar, just to get right. You guys a chuckle. But right. That is probably the so when I say that, it's twofold. It's partially because once in my life I got a traffic ticket at some point. I'm sure I got a traffic ticket on a Thanksgiving morning driving from Cleveland somewhere. And because I got a driving ticket, I know that if something happens to me, that ticket from 2017 will be used to prosecute me in my 2020 death, because there is no accountability. And because I know there is no accountability for that, the person pulling me over knows there's no accountability, and they can smell that fear. And I firmly believe that they bathe in black fear. Imagine that. They bathe in the fear of a black person knowing I got a gun. You probably don't. I can come up with any reason that I so choose to end your life.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too.
Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.